Welcome back to the Deep Line Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analysts, and my old Homewood homie, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. May Madness is upon us, so we have our old friend and IL editor-in-chief, Matt Kinnear, with us as our guest this week to recap Wednesday opening round games and break down all eight first round games coming up this weekend. Lots to get to, so Dixie, let's get it. Welcome back into the show, Matt. It's nice to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm pumped.
Dixie, since we last talked last week, we've had so much happen. We've had conference tournaments. We had Selection Sunday. We had the PLL draft, another year that neither of us got drafted. And we have a new Pope.
I was just going to say, that is the biggest news. We just got a new American, no less.
Yes, an American Pope, who I'm hearing that he went to Villanova. So he's probably a lacrosse fan.
Maybe.
We need some white smoke when the committee reveals the bracket from now on. Instead of ESPNU selection show, we just all like gather in Indianapolis and see when the white smoke comes out to see who's playing in the tournament.
I felt like this conclave moved faster, probably because A, I've never really paid attention to conclave, but B, I read the book and watched the movie Conclave. I was reading the book before Pope Francis passed away, finished it, and then watched the movie. And there were a lot of twists and turns in that conclave. It looks like this edition was drama-free. Relatively drama-free, I should say.
You know where there's going to be lots of drama, Dix? Foxborough, Massachusetts, May 23rd to 26th, when the men's and women's NCAA championship weekends are heading back to Gillette Stadium, held jointly for the first time since 2017. There's nowhere else in the world for lacrosse fans to be. And if you don't already have tickets through this promo deal, I don't know what you're doing, but if you haven't gotten them yet, if you're waiting to see what teams are going to make the tournament and what the bracket might look like, now's the time to get them. And you can use our special discount code to get a savings on your tickets. This year, Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, our loyal listeners, $5 off all single day ticket options for both men and women by using the code ILPOD at checkout. So head to ncaa.com/laxtickets and enter the promo code ILPOD, that's ILPOD, at checkout to purchase your tickets. You know you're going to be there championship weekend, so why not save $5 off on your tickets and help us show the NCAA how awesome our DFly and Dixie listeners are by purchasing your tickets today using our promo code. Once again, that's ncaa.com/laxtickets and promo code ILPOD at checkout for $5 off your tickets. All right. We had the thing that they're now calling the opening round games that feed into the first round games. Sounds like the same thing to me, but we'll stick to the terminology. Wednesday night were the opening round games. Air Force beat Robert Morris 14-9, flew out to an early 5-2 lead in the first quarter, hang on for the win. And Siena lost to Albany 11-9. Similar story. Albany takes a 6-2 lead after the first quarter, never gave it up. I pass this off to my two co-hosts today and experts. Matt, I'll start with you. Let's talk about Albany and Siena to start.
Well, first of all, I mean, just a tremendous showing from the Capital District, right? You know, this was kind of a celebration of two people who have been extremely meaningful to that community, Coach Scott Maher at Albany, Liam Gleason, the Siena coach, who, you know, was a player at Albany, was an assistant at Siena before being an assistant at Albany. You know, I talked to him the other day for a story, and it's, you know, he was out there on the lacrosse fields coaching his daughter's youth lacrosse team, you know, in the Capital District. And that's just kind of the people they are, right? You know, they're people involved in the community. So, you know, great game. Glad that it was close. Albany, though, is a team that, like, you know, when you think of Albany, you think of the free-flowing, you know, the Thompson brothers, like the way that they play. But, like, they're really kind of coming into their own with goaltending right now. That's something that I think was a huge, huge difference in the America East tournament. And then, you know, Smith was just like on fire in this game as well. So I think that there's, you know, and then you have someone like Max Neeson, who's a defenseman. You know, I think Albany is probably underrated in their ability to play good defense. Obviously, they're playing Cornell, and I don't think the best defense in the world, would really kind of stand much of a chance against the Cornell offense. But you got to give some credit for the way that Coach Marr has kind of reinvented his team and his program throughout time. And then when you look at Robert Morris Air Force, there's an explosive quality to this Air Force team. They were down against Jacksonville in the conference tournament. And they scored a bunch of goals in a row, and they kind of turned that game on its head in a flash. And then the same thing in the Utah game. They have these like they're one of these teams that just has these like 4 or 5 minute stretches where they just go off offensively, and it really changes the game for you. Kalen Driggs is kind of having his like exposure on the national stage. He had 5 goals in the game on Wednesday night, but he was enormous in the conference tournament as well. So, they're a team that, like, obviously Maryland is going to be head and shoulders more talented top to bottom than them. But I could see there being a stretch of a few minutes where you're looking at this game and being, wow, these guys are really hanging with the Terps.
I love the hot take. The best defense in the world couldn't stop Cornell. It's a bold statement,
I
Cotton.
mean, did you watch did you hear Freebird played 3 million times over that weekend?
Yes, a lot. Actually, I didn't hear it as much because I was traveling back from Ann Arbor during the Ivy League championship game. And I tried to stay away from things as much as possible. But once I turned my phone on after landing, all the threads of, I guess the biggest thing out of that Cornell Princeton game was that 2 minute non-releasable called in the fourth quarter that generated a lot of buzz. And it was what a weekend for penalties. You had a vicious hit in Providence, Villanova that was only a 2 minute non-releasable, but in the Maryland Penn State game in the semifinals, first time I've ever broadcast where I've had a 3 minute non-releasable. That's neither here nor there. Matt just gave a great summary. What I would say about Albany is, who picked Albany to win the America East tournament? I did last week. I said I think Albany can get this done.
Yeah,
Got
you
a little
did.
hairy there at the end last night, right? With
Little bit.
Albany and Siena.
Yeah, they had a 4-goal lead and almost gave opened the door for Siena to come back. I will say that Brady Smith made some excellent saves in the fourth quarter to really like stop any kind of run that Siena had. But even with like what was it like 13, 14 seconds left, Siena gets the ball back and they're up a man because an offsides penalty and a chance to cut the lead and maybe win a faceoff and change it. And they threw it out of bounds. They threw it out of bounds. So Albany will move on to face Cornell. And then, Air Force will move on to face Maryland on
How about Air
Sunday.
Force too? In the conference tournament, going through the 1 and 2 seeds to win that championship. That was impressive for the Falcons.
And they did it the hard way, right? They were down big in the semifinal game against Jacksonville, and really had to come back. I think it was they scored something like 8 or 9 goals in a row in that game. So they're kind of one of those teams that's been, running at high octane for 2 weeks in a row now. They had to win a bunch of games in a row to kind of get that share of the ASUN regular season. It was three teams that were finally tied for the best record in the ASUN. So they've been, going this fast, going full throttle, no pun intended for the Air Force there, but going full throttle for probably about 4 or 5 weeks now, which I don't know if that's where you want to be, or do you kind of get to the NCAA first round and you're a little deflated by this point? But I guess we'll find out on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, it's always impressive when you see these teams that are maybe like the fourth seed in their conference tournament. They got to play the host team. They beat them. Colgate's a perfect example of how they knocked off Army. And then you think like, are they done? Is that the big upset that they have in them? And it's always fun to watch them secure the championship and keep playing at that high level. And we'll see a lot more of that this weekend. All right, a reminder that today's weekend preview is brought to you by our friends at Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. All right, guys, let's dig in to this weekend's games. There's eight of them, four each day, and they're in a noon, 2:30, 5, and 7:30 time slots, as we normally do. We'll go chronologically through the schedule this weekend, and it all starts on Saturday, May 10th. down in Chapel Hill when the Richmond Spiders, winners of the Atlantic 10 and 8 straight games, kick things off against the number 8 seeded Tar Heels, who get into the tournament by way of an at-large berth. The Tar Heels are 10-4 on the season. Richmond is 13-3. This game will be at noon, and you can catch it on ESPNU.
It'll be Anish Shroff, Quinn Kesnick to kick things off from Tobacco Road, North Carolina. You couldn't have witnessed a more poor performance last Friday night in the Ivy League semifinals against Duke. I mean, that game was over early. The offensive continuity didn't seem to be there. The offensive flow, rhythm, never really got into one. But they still earn the number 8 seed and get a home game at Durance Field against a Richmond team that went into the Atlantic 10 tournament and took care of business. Dan and I said last week, if Richmond just stays focused, play the brand of spiral lacrosse they have all year, they're probably going to be successful. And they had to beat High Point, who upset St. Joe's a second time in 2025. So it's and on Hawk Hill, nonetheless. We actually even said this tournament being in Philadelphia may be a little bit of advantage to the Hawks, and it did not work out. North Carolina is going to have their hands full in this game. And these are two teams that are very similar in terms of their body of work, but it's also geographical when you look at this. For years, it has been Virginia Richmond in the first round. Virginia's not here. Carolina is. Similar resumes. Makes sense to get them together in the 8 versus the unseeded game.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are looking at this and thinking, man, Richmond should have a home game here. Obviously, the difference between the eye test and what the numbers tell you sometimes are two different things. But I have to feel like if you've been watching the last 2 weeks, there's good reason to think that Richmond should be the favorite going into this game. Like you said, a pretty poor performance from North Carolina in that ACC game. To me, it kind of is one of these teams where, like, I think of Richmond, I think of complimentary lacrosse, I think of depth over star power. North Carolina, I think a little bit more the opposite. This is a team that's kind of been riding that Petrimala Owen Duffy duo pretty hard throughout the year. And if they're not 100% or just things aren't clicking, they got to find some more. And there have been times this year where they certainly have found that, but they got to find some more. Whereas Richmond, I feel like a lot of casual lacrosse fans wouldn't really be able to name like many players on the Richmond roster, but they keep getting it done. I love this defense. Their numbers, like I said, are complementary. They don't have the best offense, but they have, an offense and a defense both around 10, 11, 12, depending on what metric that you use. And just, it's been 11 years. Dan Shamati's built it the right way. He's built it kind of on fundamentals and, more of like a steady steps forward. And it just feels like this is kind of like the next step for them is winning a game in the NCAA tournament, something they haven't done.
Well, Richmond will have their chance to prove themselves and get that first NCAA win at noon on ESPNU. In the 2:30 time slot on ESPNU, the CAA champion Towson Tigers, who are 11-5, will travel to New Jersey to take on the third seeded Princeton Tigers. Towson started the season 1-5, but now has reeled off 10 straight wins. Four of those were OT wins. Matt, what's your take on this game, and how does Towson stop the vaunted Princeton offense?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough, and Towson's kind of got to stick to its identity. If you've watched any of the Towson games over the past few weeks, Joe Petro has been everywhere. He's a guy that's, he's going to be aggressive. He's going to go for the calls turnover. He's going to go for the takeaway. And I think Towson's kind of got to, like just dance with the one that brought you here, right? I think you might be content to kind of switch things up, but I love the way that they're aggressive, but then they can switch into zones at times as well when they need to slow the game down. So I think if they keep Princeton, if they make it unpredictable and chaotic for Princeton throughout this whole game, that could be a recipe to start something. And then when, you get Mikey Weishaar playing hot and Ronan Fitzpatrick is a guy who, like, on any given game, maybe he'll have 0 goals, maybe he'll have 1 goal, but maybe he'll have 6 or 7 goals as well. So keep it unpredictable. Keep it aggressive and use this kind of varied defensive pressure that you can do to your advantage.
I had the opportunity to watch Princeton play live against Yale, and I walked away incredibly impressed We talk about their attack often, and we should, but their midfield, Bonanno and Wade, Palumbo, those guys are good. They're really, really good, and they're a handful. And then defensively, I think Princeton is very underrated, starting in the goal with Ryan Craddock. And then they just have a rope unit that runs 5-6 deep with athletes and guys who can make plays. So I think Princeton is a favorite in this game. But to your point, Petro makes Towson different defensively. I watched them play live against Loyola, and they really struggled against the Greyhounds that night. And Petro and another defender were out for that game. But Towson faces off well. They have momentum. They're believing. They had some tight moments in the CAA tournament, which I think is going to benefit them. And this should be an entertaining game. It should be an entertaining game. And how about the history between these two programs when you look at postseason? I mean, right off the bat, I remember 1991. I think it was a 3-4 overtime game. Towson beat Princeton. And 2001, I want to say, because Tony Seaman was early in his tenure at Towson, got into the national semis, and that was a great game. So this is a renewal of some postseason history with Princeton and Towson.
And one thing I wanted to add about Princeton is you're totally right. And Princeton is certainly the favorite in here. I love Petro and what he can do, but Princeton is a favorite for sure into this. Brayden Saris is a guy that I just have a hunch is going to have a million goals in the NCAA tournament. He's going to be like one of those. He's got 11 goals in the season. He feels like he scored some big ones, especially in that Ivy League tournament. I don't know. I just he's my pick for the guy who maybe comes out of nowhere. I mean, certain out of nowhere isn't the right way to describe him, but he's not Maxi Kabiri Burns or whatever. He's going to be that secondary scoring that I think takes them pretty far in this tournament.
He's your Connor Gill of 2025.
He's a good value pick in the inside lacrosse fantasy
That's
draft
right.
for
Goal
NCAA
for
tournament.
goals, not for assists. Goals
Yeah.
only.
All right, moving on. At 5 o'clock, Colgate, the surprise winner of the Patriot League tournament, will try to avenge a 14-9 loss in the season opener when they take on Penn State in State College at 5 o'clock. Colgate's 10-7 on the season. Penn State is 10-4. Dixie, you told me you thought that Penn State was playing some of the best lacrosse in the Big Ten and kind of like them in the Big Ten tournament. Let's start with you and get your take on this game.
Yeah, Matt Ward and Drew Carter will have this game from Panzer Stadium. And to your point, Dan, looking back at last weekend's semifinal in the Big Ten tournament, Maryland, Penn State. Penn State outshot the Terps almost by double, dominate the faceoff dot, had a 3-minute non-releasable foul in the fourth quarter, didn't do anything with it. So they had opportunities to put Maryland away, and they just could not take advantage. I still like the way they're playing. Reed Gills at the faceoff dot did a great job. He went the distance and he took every faceoff last week against Maryland, made the all-tournament team. And when you look at them offensively, Matt Traynor continues to play well. It's just they're going to have to face a Colgate team that there was a relief pitcher years ago for the Philadelphia Phillies, Mitch Williams, and he was a crazy dude. And he described himself as pitching with his hair on fire. That's how Colgate plays lacrosse. The 10-man ride is what they're known for. But offensively, they take chances. They will push the tempo. They will throw passes when you don't think that they're going to throw passes. I mean, they have six guys with 20 or more points. Two of them, Liam and Rory Connor, have 85 and 79. You put that in your pipe and smoke it. Jack Turner, 63 points. So this team can score. My question marks here, can they compete at the faceoff dot? And Jack Frassian and that Penn State defense can dial it up long range. Frassian scored against Rutgers. So you got to be real careful with that 10-man ride. But what a credit to this Colgate team to go into West Point last weekend and win the Patriot League tournament championship. There were two teams in there that you could just look at and say growth, development, Lafayette and Colgate. And now the Raiders get the AQ and they're representing the Patriot League in this game.
Yeah, Matt Lacombe, he had a million saves in that game against Army and then continued it in the championship game as well. I think, certainly he's got to have a lot of saves in this game if they're going to win. For Penn State, I'm curious how they handle chaos in that sense of, when I think of the Big Ten teams, and maybe this is a rightful reputation or maybe it's not, but I just think of kind of teams that are heavily coached and buttoned up and disciplined. It's not always the case, but I think it's a general rule. And then you get this Colgate team that is just like nothing you've ever seen before. They did see it obviously at the beginning of the year, and they handled it well there. So I'm just curious of like when they're after playing so many of these Big Ten games, when they kind of see this like new different style of team, how much is that first 5 minutes going to be a little bit of shock and awe, and how do they deal with that? I think Jeff Tamburini, the way he runs his program, probably, maybe they might be as better equipped as anyone to handle something like this, just because, he is someone who has a very disciplined team year in, year out. But that's what I'm looking for in this game is the ride. You're going to get frustrated by a goalie sometimes. How do you handle that and move on and play your game?
Great points, because that's what happened in the semifinal against Maryland. Logan McNaney was really, really good. Penn State got some great looks and weren't able to cash in. The one thing I like about Penn State in this game, they lost to Colgate back in 2024. So there's no sneaking up. There's no, hey, this team beat us, not that long ago. And so they're capable.
But at the same time, Colgate was playing already with a ton of confidence and also knows that they can get the best of Penn State as they did when they knocked off the then number four ranked Nittany Lions last year. This should be a great game. And finally, in the nightcap on Saturday, Georgetown will play at seven-seeded Duke at 7:30 on ESPNU. Georgetown is making its seventh straight NCAA tournament appearance after capturing its seventh straight Big East tournament title. It's amazing. The Blue Devils enter after whipping UNC but falling to Syracuse in the ACC title game. The last time Duke was the seventh seed was 2013, and the Blue Devils caught fire on their way to their second NCAA title. Matt, I'll let you start on this one.
Yeah, I feel like this is the game that nobody's talking about, right? Like, I don't know. It seems like it's the game, obviously outside of the games where they had the opening round opponents, but Georgetown Duke has kind of really flown under the radar, and Georgetown has flown under the radar as well. And I think if you look at their past 4 weeks or so, they're certainly playing the best lacrosse that they have this year, maybe the best lacrosse that they've played over the past 2 years. They've gotten healthy. They're kind of like, they're Christian Sweezy made this point, and I'm going to parrot this point, is like they're kind of like a Big East version of Duke. They're physical and athletic. They've got depth. I don't know if necessarily they have the star power, although they've shown in the Big East Championship that they've got some guys like Aiden Carroll, for example, who can really put the ball in the net. I really don't know which way this one's going to go. I would be very, very hesitant to make any prediction, but I feel like Georgetown's playing its best lacrosse. Duke just hasn't really felt like it's captured the magic that they have, that we know them for in May. So I'm curious how that goes. And, I'm really watching their rope unit and their D middies. Aiden McGuire is having a heck of a year. In games like this, I think that's very likely the difference is how your rope unit plays, especially against, a Georgetown team that, like, I'm not sure how many guys that they have up and down their lineup that can beat Duke's D middies.
You mentioned it, Georgetown playing their best lacrosse. So April 12th at home versus Denver, they lose 7-3. Since then, and you're like, well, okay, where's Georgetown's offense? They got nothing. 21-8, 17-9, 19-8, 16-8. They rattle off those wins. But previously, beating Marquette in double overtime, 10-9, they beat them 19-8. And then Villanova was a 17-9, 16-8. So obviously the Hoyas just match up real well with the Wildcats. We know they can play defense. Tremendous goaltending, good close D. Aiden Carroll, though, are they too reliant on one player? Is a question that I have. And I disagree with you a little bit with Duke finding the magic. I felt like their backs were against the wall after losing a tough, tight one to Carolina at home. And then they dominated Syracuse, and then they got the bet much better of North Carolina in the rematch. They fell to Syracuse in the ACC championship game, but I think they were able to establish a little bit of mojo, trying some different configurations. Tomas Delgado, chief amongst them, getting some minutes and really producing. What I think he had 6 goals in the ACC tournament. Yeah, this is, and I agree with you. This is one that people aren't talking a whole lot about. This will be Quint in a niche again in making the trip up from Carolina to Durham, and should be a great game. I mean, what a game to kind of the nightcap to wash it all down for first day.
A game that everyone is talking about will kick off the action on Sunday when Notre Dame will travel to Columbus, Ohio to take on the fourth-seeded Ohio State Buckeyes at noon. That game's on ESPN2. So the 14-2 Buckeyes go win their first Big Ten lacrosse championship on their arch rivals field. And what do they get? A brutal first-round appointment against the two-time defending NCAA champs. Dixie, I'll let you take this one to start.
This is all about geography, plain and simple. All about geography. And let's face it, Notre Dame is a team that wasn't as dominant this year as they have been the last couple of years when they won the national championship. So their metrics, the RPI and chief amongst them, this game does unfortunately fit for Ohio State. And Ohio State was able to ascend up a couple of spots by winning the Big Ten championship. Look, regardless, this is an Ohio State team that plays with a lunch pail mentality. They felt the sting of losing at home to Utah and then ran off 11 straight victories. Watching them last weekend in Ann Arbor, this is a team that's bought in. They're united, they're focused, they're playing aggressive, they're playing loose, they're playing fast. The way they came out against Maryland, I don't think I've ever seen a Maryland team get bum rushed like that right out of the gate. And for the record, was it Gannon Matthews got his tooth knocked out? He was not wearing a mouthpiece. Allegedly, was not wearing a mouthpiece. So that'll happen. Kids, put it in. Protect your pearly whites. And Kalif Fiok, if we had to stop and pick right now, that's a first-team All-American goalie with the way he's playing. And it's not just his saves; it's his demeanor, his attitude, and they're good. They're a good team. Notre Dame, they've got the experience. They've got the pedigree. If you wanted to poke the bear even more, I guess what people are calling it with Chris Kavanaugh on the PLL draft a couple of days ago, that he Shador Sandered, he kept falling down the draft pick list. He's going to be motivated. I think the health of Matt Jeffrey is a big question mark. He didn't play in the ACC tournament. Will he be back? And this should be a great crowd. Paul Carcaterra, Chris Cotter will be in Columbus. And this is what many people are looking at as the game of the weekend.
Yeah, and this one will be on ESPN2, so even be a broader audience seeing this game. Dixon, you set this up so well, and like you said, never seen a Maryland team bum rush like that. Never seen an Ohio State team like kind of like with that much oomph to it. Just feel like they're a team that manufactures wins. And that game, they felt like they were ready to, no pun intended, with the Gannon Matthews incident, ready to punch somebody in the face. Surprised there wasn't an equipment check there in that one with I don't know if that's illegal to not have a mouth guard, but surprised that didn't
Ain't nobody
become a
checking mouth guard.
storyline. But
Gloves, yes. Mouth guard, no.
I mean, who's pissed off more in this game, right? Notre Dame for having to go to Ohio State, give up, and to Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame didn't get the job done at the end of the year to get themselves a home game. Or Ohio State for having this remarkable season, beating Maryland, winning the Big Ten championship, and then having the back-to-back defending champions come to your stadium. Who's more pissed off, but who channels that energy the right way, is going to be the key to this one. Obviously, Ohio State won the game early in the year. That's a theme of this bracket, is rematches. Three rematches in the first round, something they try to avoid. But the way that you had ACC teams kind of bunched up there, it was unavoidable to not have some rematches. So I'm looking at that, and I thought today they announced the Tworton finalists today. I thought Kalif Fiok should have been in that list. I know it's an offensive award, but his production speed, he's number two in goals against average in the country behind Sean Byrne from Army. He's still alive in the tournament, and he just brings this. Some levity, I would say, some comfort and some levity to this Ohio State team that has them playing in a way that, I haven't seen since they went to the Final Four back years ago. And I believe that was in Gillette, right?
was
Yeah.
2017.
I like the similarities there.
And
Again,
one
that
thing, did you mentioned the crowd, but did you see the ticket prices for Ohio?
I saw you put something up, man. That's going to cost you a pretty penny, right?
It's only about 2,000 seats, so that's not very big. And obviously during the year it looks great because it's pretty full for most of their games, but then you get to something like this and it's overwhelming how many people want to be in that small stadium. So there was someone selling a first row ticket for over $1,000, and then standing room tickets were going for over $100 at the Ohio State Lacrosse Stadium. So it'll be a tough ticket
I bet Terry Foy is an Ohio native, buys that $1,000 ticket.
to get. Yeah, he loves to support the team. That's awesome to hear for lacrosse and big step forward, but should be an awesome game. Can't wait to watch that one Sunday at noon. In the 2:30 time slot on ESPNU, Red Hot Air Force, who we talked about at the beginning of the show, the surprise winner of the Atlantic Sun, who has won seven straight games and started the season 2-7, will take on the second-seeded Maryland Terrapins, who are 11-3 overall. Maryland has one of the strongest resumes. Matt, you will be covering this game in College Park, so I'll let you have the floor first.
Yeah, I mean, whatever you expect Maryland in the first round, particularly playing a team that just played in the opening round game, you kind of pencil in Maryland at least to the quarterfinals, no matter who they're playing, which maybe it's fair, maybe it's not, but that's just the way that John Tillman has led this program. The thing that I'm looking for, not so much specific to this game, but just Maryland as a whole, is I don't know if Daniel Kelly's gotten enough credit for the way he's diversified his game this year. I think it's been pretty. The way that offense, again, it's a six-member offense, not necessarily a star power offense. That's why you don't see someone from Maryland on the Tourton finalist list. But I really appreciate the way that he's grown as a player heading here in his senior year. And then, of course, you've got playoff McEnany. What's he going to do in the playoffs? Is he going to be the McEnany that we saw winning the most outstanding player of the championship? That's certainly a huge chip in the favor of the Terps. They should win this game, but I do think that Air Force is going to put on some pressure early, and you're going to tune into this game for a stretch of 5 to 10 minutes and be like, oh my gosh, these Falcons can really play here.
Agreed. And watching Maryland last weekend, Kelly was erased after he scored a goal after review, and he was just erased by Ohio State. And that's a great point you make about Maryland in terms of just the balance scoring, the depth of scoring. Ohio State features that as well. My question marks for Maryland are a little bit, the short sticks got run by last week. And Ohio State did a really nice job of taking Jack McDonald, a terrific long stick middie. They took him behind the goal, and I think they exposed him a little bit. So we'll see if other teams incorporate that strategy that was incorporated by Ohio State this past weekend. But this is a tall order for the Air Force Falcons. Maryland coming off the loss. I mean, you saw John Tillman after the final whistle blew. I mean, he was the first person to go up to congratulate Nick Myers on the Big Ten championship. I'm sure it was genuine, but maybe a little bit of mind games, or John's playing chess a lot of times. So he knows what buttons to push and what to do. And you mentioned it, Matt, when Maryland has a week, and especially if they're playing a team on short rest, that typically works out in the favor of the Terps.
Yeah, you don't want to play John Tillman after a loss. And the guys that we mentioned, Daniel Kelly, he's going to have a better game than he had before. Jack McDonald, I think, has had an awesome year. He's going to have a better game. It's the last place you maybe want to be in lacrosse is playing a John Tillman team the week after they got beat handily.
And think about everything Carolina learned from that loss to Duke, everything Maryland's going to learn from that loss to Ohio State. It's better to lose in the conference tournaments than, obviously the NCAA is win or go home.
In the 5 p.m. time slot on ESPNU, two at-large berths facing off here as number 6 seed and ACC tournament champ Syracuse hosts 10-4 Harvard. This is one of the three rematches as Harvard nipped the Orange at the Dome on February 22nd by a final score of 15-14. It was the only time in Syracuse history that Harvard has beaten the Cuse. The Orange are 19-1 all time against the Crimson. Dixie, I'll give you first chance to set this game up.
Well, thank you. Since I'm calling the game with Mike Corey, how kind of you to allow me to speak first. Rematch of that game in February, where Syracuse won 28 out of 32 faceoffs and had a 5-0 lead to start the game and lost. So you think about Syracuse and their setbacks this year. I think this is the one that Coach Gary Gate is looking forward to avenging. That's the one game that kind of sticks in his craw of the games that they lost. So to get a second chance at the Crimson, I think the Orange are really looking forward to it. And they took care of business last week. There was chatter before the ACC tournament of Syracuse probably being on the road if they got in, because there were some question marks around their eligibility. And what they do, they go out, they beat Notre Dame, they beat Duke, and leave Charlotte with the championship. So Finn Thompson's back. He's healthy, looking good. This is going to be a tough out for Harvard, maybe the most unpopular team in America right now, since they did get that final NCAA tournament spot over Army. Let's be clear, the selection committee didn't hose Army. Nobody stuck it to the Black Knights. Army hurt Army. When you lose your conference tournament in the semifinals at home, by every measurable metric that the NCAA committee uses to select teams for at-large berths, Harvard had Army beat on every metric for the most part. And Matt, you could probably speak better to it than I can. But when you look at, you mentioned a Tuorton finalist. Have we ever seen a mix like this? Jackson Eicher for Army, Coulter Mackesy for Princeton, Sam King of Harvard will be in this game, CJ Kirst from Cornell, and our last one is Chris Kavanaugh from Notre Dame. So one ACC guy in this mix, a Patriot League participant, and you've got three Ivies going for the hardware in DC. So a really eclectic mix, but this should be an entertaining game. I'm looking forward to going into the dome. It'll be the first time I've been there since it's been renovated, and I heard it's even better. So psyched for this one.
Yeah, and I remember I covered when Harvard played Princeton in the regular season. I was at the game. I was talking to Coach Jerry Byrne before the game, and he made a comment about there's a saying, if you get to 100% combined with your goalie save percentage and your faceoff win percentage, you're going to feel good, right? So if you get 40% on the faceoffs, if you get 60% saves, that maybe counteracts that. If you get 30% on the faceoffs and you get 70% saves, I think Harvard's done it like 5 times in the last several years. And they've still won games despite that. They got destroyed at the faceoff X in this first game against Syracuse. I don't know how sustainable that is to, lose over, 80% of your faceoffs, 90% of your faceoffs twice to a team like Syracuse and still win both those games. So they got to figure out something there. Obviously, Sam King gets you a lot of that back with the way that he can do stuff on the ride. They get a lot of ground balls maybe after a faceoff has been won to negate that a little bit, but they've got to make every single play that is a contested play for a possession has to go for Harvard if they have any chance at winning this game. And we're talking about this game like they're the underdog. They did beat them early in the year, like you said, but that is a huge, huge gaping hole. That kind of exists right now. And they've proven people, people have said this all year and they've proven people wrong all year with this. So I'm just curious how that goes. Also, Sam King, you said he's in that Tuorton mix. I like the way that so many of their other offensive players have also developed. I don't know if Logan Ipp gets enough credit for what he does from the midfield. And then, of course, you've got Jack Spiedel and Tenny Malone. So I'm looking forward to it, but I'm looking forward to see what Harvard can do to manufacture more possessions in this game outside of just winning it straight up at the X.
And in the final game of the weekend in the 7:30 time slot on ESPNU, the Albany Great Danes take on number one seed Cornell, who's 14-1 on the season. Albany, America East champ, winners over Siena in the opening round on Wednesday night. They've won 7 straight. But I know you're a huge fan of Coach Scott Maher and the Albany Great Danes, Matt Kinnear. So I'll let you start with this one.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this, it's tough to predict anything else except for a decisive Cornell win with the way that they're playing, the way that this offense can seemingly score at will. Throughout the year, I felt like Cornell's defense did get better, at least compared to their defense last year. I do think at times against Princeton, though, the defense did look a little bit lost. Obviously, they overcame that with that spurt of goals. Obviously, you mentioned that penalty that kind of, maybe gave them a little bit of edge, and then they just kind of went from there. And CJ Ryan Goldstein and company just went off. I like the way that Hugh Kelleher has been playing down the stretch. Obviously, Goldstein has if they didn't have CJ Kearse, we'd be talking about Goldstein as first team All-American right now with the way he's playing. This team, about three quarters of the way through the season, I would say maybe when they beat Harvard in the middle of April is when I think that they took a turn from being the best team by default because there wasn't a runaway number one team to being the best team that looks like they have all the pieces to win a national championship. And I think that they do. Obviously, a lot can happen in this tournament, and there's a lot of teams that can certainly overtake them, but it really was cemented to me over the past several weeks that this is certainly the team to beat. Albany is going to go out there and, like I said earlier, I like the way that Coach Marr has reinvented himself and reinvented this team. They're going to put up a fight. They're not going to be scared. They're going to go out there. They're going to have fun. But man, Cornell is just so good.
I agree. There's not a whole lot more to add there other than Albany has belief. They've got some momentum. They're going to go in. They are not going to be afraid. But Cornell right now is just they're just a wagon right now. They are playing at such a good level, such a high level. They've been here before in terms of going to the national championship game in 2022 under Connor Bucic. So they know what it takes to get to Memorial Day. And that's their focus. And I think this game should be, this game will be fun to watch. But like you mentioned, anything other than a Cornell win will be very, very, very much a surprise.
Play Freebird.
So that's your lineup for this weekend. Eight games, four on Saturday, four on Sunday. Appointment TV. Make your plans to catch all of them or as many as you can. All right, it's time for the give and go. And since I have two lacrosse insiders who spend a lot of time covering games in press boxes across the country, that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about press boxes, who's got the best setup. And I'm going to have you guys give some suggestions. And I want you to think of these things, rating them on three qualities. One is the physical space, the physical presence of the press box, like amenities, the age, sort of like, is it new? What's the bathroom like? Is it roomy? Is it tight? Second, the view. Not all press boxes and stadiums are designed the same way. Some have a great view of the field. Some might have a track between the stadium and the playing field. Some are up super high, some are low. It's not always the same. And then the third one, and maybe the most important for this particular podcast, is the hospitality. What kind of food service do they have? Is it quality? Is it plentiful? Is it tasty? Is it local? I'll let you guys hammer on this. And I'll let let's have Dixie start, since he's usually gets to go second when I start this. Dixie, do you have any nominations for best press box?
Let me think. I mean, obviously, it's not the most palatial, but it's probably the one I'm most familiar with, and that's Hopkins, just because it's hasn't changed
Okay.
in decades.
It has
It's
not a
very
whole lot.
primitive, but it's like home, and they do a great job of making sure that there's typically wine merchant sandwiches at halftime, which is great. Another good one, Rutgers. It's not so much the press box, but the hospitality that the Rutgers guys show. There'll be games where they'll go out and get crispy pizza for us and Woodmont Deli as well. And that's Jordan Ozer, their SID, and then Alex Schoen, who's a does some lacrosse broadcasting and played for the Scarlet Knights a couple years ago. That's a good one. So I'm not really a press box guy. Like that's more Matt Speed. I'm more of the broadcast area. Michigan did a really nice job hosting last weekend. I enjoy the vantage point there, Michigan Lacrosse Stadium. And you want to talk about hospitality? They have a lady who is, I don't know what her official capacity is. Maybe she's a greeter. Maybe she's making sure people that are coming in and out of the place they're appropriate. But she makes cookies and brownies and puts them out for people and different flavors every time. There's always two different flavors for when you come. So she's super, super great. I'm
Hey
trying to think.
Dix,
I know I'm
let me jump in here for a second. So you said something that I think that some people who don't have the access that you guys have, or even I have, to attend some of these games or watch on TV, they may not understand. So you're saying that the broadcast area is not always the same as where the media and regular press covering the game might sit. And can you explain that a little bit more for some of the venues that you work in?
Yes. So at for the Big Ten, when you're at Maryland, when you're at Hopkins, when you're at Penn State, you're in a separate broadcast booth from the media and other sports information or university personnel. Notre Dame is an exception. That's where you're right there. Princeton is the same way. So and it's not bad. It's just not as comfortable as having your own space. You say something that's not the most flattering about a school or with the way they're playing, and you start to get dirty looks from people if you're in the same press area as everybody. So that's what I mean by that.
And you're seeing in this talk, the hospitality that Dixie gets is a lot better than the hospitality that I get.
Oh, how dare you? How dare
Well,
you?
elaborate on that, please.
As a lowly writer, I'm just given space to be in the presence there, and not necessarily amenities. But there are some schools, like Dixie mentioned, some of the great ones. Rutgers is always awesome. Loyola is great. Navy is great. Towson, I was there covering the CAA championship, and they had a nice spread. They've had sandwiches there, and they had pizza there. But I would say that probably 90% of the time I'm there, you're just on your own for food. A lot of these, especially like when you go to, I mean, a lot of these places just never have people cover them. And that's one of the sad things, is, I'll go to a game and it's like, oh my God, like there's someone here. Like, what are we supposed to do? Like, and it's great because a lot of times I just kind of do my own thing and grab the coaches after the game and that. But, it's a sad thing that there's not more, mainstream media, so media outside of just lacrosse people, who are covering a lot of these teams week in, week out, so that they would necessitate having like a food place they go to and stuff like that. But everyone is always awesome. Everyone's super nice. Everyone's always accommodating. But I think the food is a relic of the past for the press folks. I always bring some jerky. Is kind of my one of my go-to things, just to get a little bit of protein. If Because especially a lot of times I'll cover like a 1 o'clock game and a 4 o'clock game or something like that. So I'll pound some jerky in the Frontier in between games before I go to play.
So,
Basically, I'm powered by Dunkin' coffee and jerky all
you're
day
pounding
Saturday.
your jerky. I like it.
So hold on a second. So I picture Matt bringing like a brown bag. Dixie's sitting up in some area where they're like serving him food, and there's this
That's
woman
not,
making
listen,
baking
Matt
home baking
said,
cookies.
so
And
when you get things at Rutgers, it typically is coming out of the pocket of people. It's not coming out of the athletic department's budget.
what?
Matt's absolutely right. Michigan had food last weekend because it was the tournament.
Wow.
Other than the sweet lady I told you about making cookies or brownies, those come out of her own pocket. Like, that's not supplied by the school. I will typically go to the truck before games, whether it's with Big Ten Network or ESPN, and they typically have some snacks for the
Yeah,
crew.
something for the crew. Yeah.
I always grab little clementines, the oranges, and trail mix. And my guilty pleasures are Nutter Butters or those cookies that are the Nutty Buddies, I think. They're like peanut butter in the shape of a peanut. Those are my two like guilty pleasures. If they have those, I'm always grabbing them. But typically I just grab trail mix and a little clementine. March
So
or
I
April.
can't. I'm stunned by this because
Yeah,
back
my
in my
coffee and jerky can't be good for my long-term health.
so I picture Matt bringing like a brown bag, but then you said you bring like jerky, and I picture like Napoleon Dynamite. You have like a pocket full of tater tots too that you're like pulling one out at a time. It's like,
or
come
the
here, give me some
trapper, what's it,
tots.
the trapper jerky commercial where the dude, before they get the fresh bag of jerky, the guy that the janky jerky that he's eating, he can't even bite into it because it's so tough and nasty.
It's a lot of eating in the car in between games and stuff like that. But to your point about the view, Syracuse, I haven't been there since any of the
Carrier
renovations,
Dome, yeah.
but the Carrier Dome, you are right on top of it and you get a
What?
really good sense of the
Yeah.
crowd. That's like because it's the open air. So you get a sense of the noise from the field and the crowd. And I love that because a lot of times you can feel disconnected from the game if you're in a press box that's super high up. I'll use Maryland as the example because everyone's seen
Yeah.
that view. You know, it's great. Their accommodations are awesome. Everyone's super nice, but you're in space. So like you feel like the game is so distant from you. I like being on top of the game. I always love to, if I have to do something directly on my laptop, obviously I'll go to the laptop. But I do love to go on the sidelines as much as possible if I can, just to get a vibe of the game there. Villanova's another good one for the view because it is further down than a lot of places. It's not so high up. Loyola is probably the best combination of like accommodations and space and all that stuff. Love Navy. And Towson really had an awesome experience at the CAA championship, so I got to give them some props too.
Awesome.
Well, hold on. I
I know
haven't
he's
been
got
in
to leave.
Loyola's press box in years. Do they still do Chick-fil-A?
I would say they I haven't been in the past year or two, but they've every time I've been there's been
Oh.
Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, Chick-fil-A.
So
Oh, good.
that's, you mean you can't beat that, right?
No.
Except for those Sunday games. No Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A and jerky.
Wow. Seems like a good place to stop. That sounds like a good episode title for this is Chick-fil-A and jerky.
Pounding jerky.
Pounding jerky. Yeah. The white
The
smoke.
jerky boys.
The white smoke means pound the jerky.
Look here, jerky. I don't need to talk to you.
Right. That seems like a great place to stop. A reminder that DeFi and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Special thanks to our guest this week, Matt Kinnear. Matt, loved having you. You're always welcome to come back whenever you like. If you like what you heard today, share this podcast, tell a friend. It's free, doesn't cost you anything, and it helps us out to spread the joy. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Dix had a couple guys reach out to me about merch. And guy was like, I want a hat. And I was like, well, if I get a couple more of these requests, I will order another batch and
Hot property.
yeah. And as always, thanks for listening and enjoy the games.